Hi everyone, and welcome to today's Art Chat. Linda Fissler is your host, and with her is Tony Pro. I just want to remind everyone or let you know that you can type your questions for either Linda or Tony into the questions section of your GoToWebinar control panel, and I'll be here to relay those on to them on your behalf. So welcome, Linda and Tony. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Doing wonderful.
Yeah, so I want to welcome Tony to the show. Tony's been with actually on the show before, at least one other time. I thought I had you on actually two times, Tony, but I couldn't find that other.
Yeah, with Michael Harding.
Yeah, I remember. I found that outline, but I thought I had you on again, but I guess maybe I didn't. So I am really, really excited to have you on the show today.
Well, thanks. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we were just talking before we started out that Tony and I haven't actually seen each other, I guess, in a couple years, even though we kind of keep up with each other on Facebook, and I'd certainly, you know, private messaged him a couple times. But, Tony, you've had some pretty major changes since the last time I saw you in L.A. You've moved to San Antonio. So
yep.
Tell us about that.
Well, the last couple of years have been a pretty roller coaster life, I would say. You know, kind of all starting with the death of my dad in, I guess it's 2013 now. It's going to be 3 years in June. But that pretty much was the start of the rest of my life, of how I thought about my family, of how I thought about my artwork. I thought about, you know, how I thought about my career, you know, where I was going, what I was doing. And a lot of it was contrasting to how my dad lived his life and what he deemed important. And so I, at the time, had been, I'd been teaching at Cal Lutheran University, and that was going pretty well. And, but I, you know, at the time we were looking into possibly opening up an atelier or school in the Thousand Oaks area that Cal Lutheran would have run, and we've been looking into that, and it never kind of happened. And and coincidentally, my school that I went to and taught at for many years, the California Art Institute, was pretty much suffering. Primarily from the diagnosis of my former and late great teacher Glenn Orbick, the drawing teacher. He had been the head of that drawing program at California Art Institute for 25 years. And he was diagnosed with brain cancer and passed away almost a year ago. It's just been about a year almost now. And that was basically the end of California Art Institute. You know, it had basically shrunk to nothing. And we, Cal Lutheran, you know, Cal Lutheran and I had been looking at kind of resurrecting it. But, you know, Los Angeles is an interesting place for art. You know, there's a lot of great artists that live in Los Angeles, and a lot of them teach out of their own studios now. And a lot of the art school, and there's a lot of art schools that teach representational art, and they struggle because they compete against each other. And, you know, opening another school or resurrecting another school in an environment, in an economy where, you know, artists are teaching out of their own studios and not interested in teaching at schools anymore, or, you know, unless they're getting paid a lot of money. That just didn't make for a scenario for me to run a school. And this opportunity popped up here in San Antonio when I came to, I did some workshops. I did a couple workshops here at the Capini Academy of Fine Arts in San Antonio. And I got to know the board pretty well, and you know, the city, and it was just it felt so welcoming to me and my work, and it seemed that people were so hungry to learn the type of drawing and painting that I was teaching, and they, you know, they offered me a chance to come and be the executive director here and teach and sort of run this program here, and I just, you know, I couldn't turn it down. It was a very, very big decision for my wife and I, though, because, you know, we both were born and raised in L.A., and all of our family and friends are there, but, you know, financially it made the most sense just because of, you know, the economy and that kind of thing, and it is significantly cheaper to live in San Antonio here. And, you know, so I did it, and it just, it was, you know, having a big expensive mortgage, you know, on my back was like having a big gorilla on my back in L.A., and now without that, I don't have to, you know, it's the stress of having to have that all the time, it's just, it's such a relief to not have that looming over me anymore.
Right.
And it was, and to be able to, because I hadn't been able to teach figure drawing and figure painting and portrait painting since I left California Art Institute. I didn't teach that at Cal Lutheran. I only taught beginning design at Cal Lutheran, so I had really missed teaching painting and drawing from life. And so this gave me the opportunity to do that. And it really, you know, I really made that decision, of course, with my wife, but I made that decision after the death of Glenn, just to sort of carry the torch for him, because as he did for Fred Fixler, and you know, there's several people carrying that torch as well. You had Jeff Watts with his great school down in San Diego, and but this is what I thought I would do, was come to Texas, because you know the Riley method and my style of painting and drawing isn't taught anywhere in San Antonio or Austin for that matter. You know, all of South Texas doesn't have that, and you know, since I've gotten down here, it's really incredible the art community here. And how even the contemporary artists, of how accepting they are of me and my work, and how excited people are to, you know, have me teaching here. You know, I'm having contemporary artists come study with me.
No.
And I just wasn't getting that in Los Angeles. It was not, it wasn't a feeling I had in Los Angeles. And so I've really kind of, it feels like being born again almost, in terms of, you know, being born again as an artist, you know,
right.
And that really is what has become important to me in my life moving forward. You know, it's making sure my family's provided for, you know, they've got fantastic schools for my kids here. You know, they did in LA too, but it just, you know, the cost involved was just too much. And, my shift has moved from, when I was younger, I wanted to be, you know, I had this vision and strive to be the greatest painter I could ever possibly be, or you know, whatever. And these days, it's just not important to me anymore. You know, painting to me, and with this move, has allowed me to just produce paintings and paint things more about what I want to say than more or less what I think would sell. So.
Right.
So after that long-winded explanation of the changes, this is where I'm at, and this is why I made this move. And you know, the first few months were very tough. I'll be honest with you, my wife and I had a very tough time. I moved here in October. My boys and I drove out with the moving truck, and my wife and daughters came later, a few weeks later. And, you know, we had a tough time. It was a very isolating feeling being away from family. And Christmas time, we went home to visit in L.A., and, you know, it kind of reopened a couple wounds of being gone. And, you know, I was kind of feeling like, oh, gee, you know, maybe I made a huge mistake. And but then, you know, a couple days before we went home, leave it to my good friend Alexi Steele, who came over to see me, and we sat and chatted, and I told him how I was feeling, and he basically reassured me that I was doing the right thing, and I was doing, you know, I was doing the right thing not only for my family, but I was doing the right thing for art, for representational art in general, and that the Kopini could become really the center of you know, representational art education in the South, because certainly there's others, you know, there's others in New York and L.A., but this could be a central hub in the center of the country for that. And he said, just you know, don't waver from your goal, and don't waver from your initial gut feeling to go. And boy, I got to tell you, when I got back to, you know, after the new year and I got back to Texas here, I had a spring in my step.
Aww.
And I just been, my feet have been, you know, running. I hit the ground running when I got back. And, you know, we've made lots of friends here now, and we've got involved with a good church, and, got the kids in the school at the church, and just the programs that we're putting together here at the Kopini. And, the board's great. We all get along. We have a great time here. And, so that's kind of where I'm at these days.
Yeah.
I know that's a long story, but, this is my headspace these days. And, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, you know, certainly, knowing you a little bit before you had made the move, and knowing through friends more or less, George, how the your father's death, and then Greg, was it Greg's? I'm sorry, Glenn's? The drawing
Glenn,
teacher.
Yeah.
Glenn, thank you. Just went out of my mind like the minute I was going to say it. Those two deaths I know really impacted you, and when I heard that you were moving to Kopini and to start doing that work, I really felt like, you know, this was going to be really good for you, Tony. So somebody who doesn't know you as well is sitting here saying, yeah, this was the right move for you too. And I think, just hearing that in your voice too was really interesting as well. I know that wasn't an easy decision, because moving out of L.A. From somebody who has always wanted to move to L.A.,
yeah,
it would have to be hard, because I mean it's just a whole, almost like a whole other country in itself. It's so large.
It is.
Yeah, you know. So,
but being that I was, you know, raised there and lived mm-hmm. there 40 plus years, I've watched LA go from, you know, a place that was, mildly easy to get around and manageable to,
yeah.
You know, in the last 20 years, it's just, you can't do anything, because it's just the traffic is so unbelievably bad, and it's so expensive to live there, and
right.
And you know, it was just, it was madness, and it, you really don't know how crazy it is until you move out of the city, until you're out of there. I mean, it doesn't take me more than 20 minutes to get anywhere in San Antonio. I can get from one side of San Antonio to the other in 20 minutes. And I mean, it's really crazy. I mean, it's phenomenal, and it does, believe it or not, it does feel good. I mean, it's strange at first, but you know, it's really a fantastic city. I mean, it's a fantastic destination. It's been rated as like number two, as the country's best destinations for a low cost vacation. Because there's so much to do here. There's so much culture, and the art scene, you know, the art's interesting. It's some of it's different, but they do have a very strong and vibrant art scene here.
Right.
And the last month or two, I've been kind of injecting myself into it. You know, I've been going to different openings around town and just meeting people like crazy, and right. You know, just trying to, you know, shake as many hands as I can and say hello and just look at what's here locally.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been having a lot of fun with that. It's great.
Good. I'm glad they it takes a little while to adjust to a big change like that, especially with all these big changes that occurred right before you made the decision to move out. But so I'm glad it's working out. So tell us a little bit about Kopini. What's the vision? What's what do you
so
think's coming
well,
down?
Um, Well, I'll start with telling you who, because most people, including myself, before I came to San Antonio, I had never heard of Pompeo Cappini. Mm-hmm. Pompeo Cappini was an Italian-born sculptor who was trained in Florence, academically, classically trained in Florence, immigrated to the United States here into New York, around, I would say, turn of the century, came to New York, worked in New York and Chicago. He had studios both in New York and Chicago, and, you know, began doing a lot of commission work and that sort of thing, and wound up down here in San Antonio, and he moved to San Antonio basically without much money. And when he got here, San Antonio at the time was very almost village-like, and it reminded him a lot of Florence, which is why he settled here. And so he got here, and then once he started, you know, working in the town, he became very well known, very well respected, and he did many, many commissions, you know, statues, monuments. The most prominent one that he did is, which is called the Spirit of Sacrifice, which is the Alamo Cenotaph, which is directly in front of the Alamo. And it's a very tall, white sort of obelisk shape. And it's carved in, I believe, Texas limestone or granite. I think it's granite. And it's an absolute beautiful piece of sculpture, and you know, it's a landmark for San Antonio. It's, I mean, the Alamo. When anybody thinks San Antonio, they think the Alamo. Mm-hmm. And Pompeo Cappini, also, aside from being an artist, he was very big into his civic duties to the city, and he was very into, he was one of the ones who saved the Alamo from becoming, you know, basically decimated. They were going to tear everything down, and he saved the Alamo from being turned into, you know, a park kind of thing. And so he's very well, I mean, he's very well known, respected here, and his work is just beautiful, and you could see a good portion of it on the website. I have one of my future goals also is to actually do an entire website and a coffee table book of his work. Cappini started the academy here. It was called the Classical Arts Fraternity, and he at the time he was a professor at Trinity University here in San Antonio, and I believe he was running the art department there. And he started this Classical Arts Fraternity as a place it was a fraternity that promoted representational art. So this was at the time when modern art was starting to really come into force, you know, in the 40s and the 50s, and it was you know, he was very he didn't reject modern art in the sense of he didn't call it art, but he just didn't like it, and he wanted to keep representational art as the pinnacle art. So he started this classical arts fraternity to promote representational art, and it would be a sort of a meeting group that, you know, artists in South Texas, predominantly San Antonio at the time, was a group for just people to get together and sort of talk about art. And I'm not sure if they actually ever did any paint outs or anything like that, or any sculpting things. But he was teaching painting at Trinity. He also taught drawing and painting as well as being a sculptor. And so then they renamed it. I'm not exactly sure why he I think he wanted to get the fraternity name out of it, and so he renamed it the Cappini Academy of Fine Arts. And the building that he was living in, he had the studio that he had built, was basically the studio that the big cenotaph was sculpted in. So it's a very high ceiling, and the shape of it kind of mimics, the shape of the studio mimics the cenotaph, the shape of it. It's kind of a big, it's a, like a big L shape. And so at the time he was married to a woman named Elizabeth de Barbieri, and they had, he had a woman named Waldine Tausch who wanted to study with him, but Capini didn't want to take her on as a you know, as a pupil, as an, you know, somewhat like an understudy, because he didn't, and this is going to sound sexist, but he didn't believe that women could be serious. A young woman couldn't be serious about being a serious sculptor because eventually they'd want to get married and have kids and da-da-da-da-da. So, which, and at the time she wasn't into that. And she, so she basically, in order for him to teach her, she had to promise him that she would never get married and have kids so she would study with him. And so he took her on, and that's exactly what she did. She never got married, never had kids, and what ended up happening was is that Capini legally adopted her as his daughter, so that way when he passed on, you know, the school would eventually, you know, the school and grounds and all that and his trust would eventually go to her.
Right.
Because he started here being very poor, and then he got really wealthy with all the, you know, the commissions and all that. And I guess he kind of, he lived very lavishly, and then he went through his money pretty quick. But the trust does, you know, the trust currently, you know, it has money that was left to you know, Elizabeth de Barbieri, and then when she passed, it was, it went to Waldine, and Waldine passed in the early 1980s. And so the Capini now, we're in our 80th year.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, well, thank you. We are, you know, we're a 501c3 nonprofit, and we have a membership of a right around 160 members. And, you know, from all over, mostly South Texas. We have some folks from Dallas and Fort Worth. And we do have Michael Harding, Michael and Karen Harding are patron members, out-of-state patron members. We have patron members all around.
They're great people.
They are. They're fantastic folks. And so what we do here now is I came on board, and there was already, you know, there was already sort of a staff of teachers. Some of the local teachers here, we have, one of them is Gladys Roland DeMorris, who's a fantastic painter, and she was kind of the fixture teacher, you know, when I got here, and you know, we're so happy to have her, because she's such a bright soul, and she's a fantastic painter, and so we have her, and then, you know, a few other, the local artists that we have, and, you know, it's mainly classes and figure drawing, and then we have a lot of painting classes. And so, but I came basically to start expanding everything, and we're in the process of expanding to another, an annex space, because right now we just have the one big studio where we run our classes in. So we're kind of limited space-wise now, but we're looking to expand out into another space downtown San Antonio, which has really become beautiful. I mean, the architecture downtown and some of the buildings, these renovated buildings, are just gorgeous. And they make for great, you know, they make for great art studios.
Right.
So we're doing that. We've been, I've been bringing in a bunch of friends, you know, good friends to do workshops, and we just had Clayton Beck here. And we had Dan Gerhardt's here to do a demo in November, and we had Bella Bacci here in January to do a sculpture demo, and we've got a pretty good lineup. It's not as big as, say, a Scottsdale Artist School lineup right now, but you know, at some point, hopefully we'll get into that size. But I've got David Kasson coming in October, and I'm putting together dates for Max Ginsburg and a bunch of other good folks coming in to, you know, and as soon as I can twist George's arm to give me an actual date,
there you go.
I'm going to have George here to do a landscape workshop. And
But
that's it. You know, I'm here just kind of running things. You know, it's different because, you know, I've always been involved with for-profit schools.
Right.
And this is the first nonprofit with a board that I've had to deal with.
Right.
And it's different. It's interesting
because there's
a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and you gotta make sure that you listen to everybody's, you know, input.
Right.
And so you can't just kind of, you know, be a maverick and just do things on your own.
Yeah.
And it's fine, you know, it keeps me in check, but I, you know, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the process, and you know, I've had management background for many years of being in the entertainment industry when I was a creative director. So I've managed things before. So it's not that part of it's not new to me.
Right. Right.
And I've got a small studio set up here at the school as well. So, you know, I do my admin and phone calls in the morning. And then I go into the studio and I work the rest of the day on paintings. And, you know, if anybody needs me, I just come out. It's not a big deal.
Right.
It's pretty quiet. It's quiet enough to where I can get work done. And, you know, I don't get interrupted nearly as much as I did when I was, a college professor. So that's us at the Capini. I mean, we're growing, and you're going to start seeing a lot more advertising, a lot more. You're going to see the Capini name quite a bit more, and here, you know, publications here and there and online. So, and we're trying to make a nice destination here in the center of the country, in a beautiful city, which is very affordable to come visit. And, you know, another option of a place to have a great workshop experience.
Right. Yeah. I actually, I didn't make it down to San Antonio, but I was at Austin for some work when I worked at Procter & Gamble. We had an offsite in Austin, Texas. But, you know, Austin was beautiful, and San Antonio was, what, like 90 minutes away, maybe? Maybe an hour
away?
It's
about an hour away. It depends on the traffic.
Yeah, I just didn't have the opportunity to swing down there, but some of the folks that were with me did go down. We're talking probably back in 1990s, maybe late 80s, I think I was there. So, and at that time it was beautiful, so I can just imagine that it's just really gotten so much nicer. And one thing that I did want to mention too, Tony, is I teach at a local art center here in Ohio, and yeah, I do appreciate the work that you're doing at the Copini, because, you know, I think these art centers are somewhat threatened if they don't start to really, you know, grab on to what they can become, if you will. Instead of just being a local art center, being more of a national place, something, because the ones that are very local and stay very local seem to be suffering a lot more than someone who has
very much so.
You know, lucky enough to have someone like you to come on, and, you know, your connections with the art community and things like that is really going to help that academy. So, you know, I salute you for doing it. I think it's great. And
I'll be honest with you. The reason why some of these smaller art community centers are having such a hard time is because of these ridiculous paint and sip places that have become a fad and have opened up.
I'm being
serious. That's what
I know. That's
you know, and there's the Pino's palette on every corner now, and it's like, you know, people think that that's what taking an art class is, and that's sad. I mean, it's great that people are getting involved, but you know what that's done to the local art schools that may not be like an atelier style, but some of the local art schools that taught painting and drawing, you know, that really hurt the business.
Yeah.
So
and the little art,
you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, I'm all for capitalism, but for crying out loud, I mean, you know, if you're going to teach art, teach it the right way, you know.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's, you know, we're kind of seeing that. I mean, that's like, what you said is absolutely true. It's kind of like one of the things that it's that's hurting the center down here. The center that I teach at has been around for close to 60 years now. So, and it's, yeah. You know, it's struggling right now. And I teach there, and, you know, I really teach art. I don't, you know, it's not the paint and sip thing, you know. So,
right. And
the folks and the people that really get into that is, you know, are very, very thankful that it's there. They have a core of supporters like your place does too, and it's just really, it's just sad to see some of this stuff happening. So, but to get to, let's talk a little bit about your direction in art. You have gone from, you know, painting figures to painting Southwest art, and still figures, as like there's mm-hmm. the Arapaho chief that I remember like in my mind, which is a beautiful painting, and then you also paint like the one is in front of us, and the ones that were before this, the clown series, I guess we can call that.
Right.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about your direction, and if you could get into a little bit about we had said talked about the consistency, like. You know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
Go ahead and talk.
So, you know, so when my dad passed away, the night before he passed away, I had a phone conversation with him. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I had been thinking about, you know, going back to exploring Western art themes, because I was really raised around Western art. My parents were Western art collectors, mm-hmm. and since I was a kid, my parents used to take me around to all the auctions and the shows. You know, that we'd go to the CA show, the Cowboy Artists of America show every year, and you know, and so I'd go into these galleries, and used to know all the names of the artists, and you know, I'd met several, you know, very well-known, respected Western artists when I was young. You know, we have video footage of it, me going in and out of museums and that kind of thing. And in fact, there's video footage that I was recording when I was, I think it was about 12 years old. And we were at the Gilcrease Museum in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And at the time, there was a retrospective of Richard Schmid's work there. And so we have this old footage from the early 80s, and I was operating the camera, and I was filming Richard Schmid's work back then. And, you know, so I, and of course, my parents being collectors of Western art, you know, I grew up in a house full of Western art and American Indian artifacts. I mean, we would go to the reservations every year. You know, my mom used to get rugs and lots of Indian jewelry, and my mom used to deal in Indian jewelry. And my dad used to make jewelry, and he was into lapidary before he became an artist.
Ah, cool.
And about the mid-80s, my dad was an anesthesiologist, but he liked to have hobbies, you know, kind of freed his mind in the evenings after working all day.
Right.
And so... My older brother Greg was in art school at the time, studying with Fred Fixler, mm-hmm. and he was in class with Morgan Weisling and, you know, a couple other people that, you know, became pretty well known. Mm-hmm. And so my dad kind of became intrigued with it, and he started taking drawing lessons from Fred Fixler and, you know, some of the other teachers that were there at the time. And so he got into it, and he started, you know, drawing Indians and painting Indians and cowboys and that kind of thing. And he was really into doing drawings of Walter Brennan and a lot of old cowboys, Will Rogers and Tom Mix and William S. Hart. And so this is what I grew up around. And when I got a little older, I started getting annoyed with it. And I kind of, you know, as a kid, you kind of naturally gravitate away from whatever it is your parents are doing. I'm sure a lot of people can identify with that.
Yep.
So, you know, I kind of gravitated away from it. And then when I became an artist, I didn't really want to do. I would practice when I was learning how to paint. I was teaching myself how to paint. I was in my dad's studio, And I would just go into his reference files. He had a huge file cabinet full of photos that he took from years and years of just going to powwows and rodeos and going to the reservations. And I mean, you name it. Wow. He just had tons of stuff. And so I would just practice. That is how I would practice. I would pull out a photograph, usually of an Indian or a cowboy or somebody, and I would paint it, you know, and you know, those paintings never saw the light of day because they usually got gessoed over or, you know, whatever. And so I did that for many years. And once I got my painting chops up enough, I started painting the things that I wanted to paint. And fast forward, you know, 15, 16, 17 years to the evening before my dad passed away, I had been thinking about and considering going back to painting Western art. And my dad was really excited about it, and he said, "That's great, you know, it'd be great," because my dad just loved it. He loved Western art. He became a fairly well-known wildlife and Western artist and landscape artist. And the next day he passed away, and so like any son who loses their father, you know, that last conversation is the one that's in your head for the rest of your life, right?
And right.
So I decided to start doing, Western art again at the time and dedicate the body of work to my dad, which is what I did. And I had been doing, you know, some Western work for about a year, year and a half. And then, of course, all through that process, What's that?
I was going to say, which is really, a process of closure for you.
Yeah, that's really exactly. You're exactly right. You know, and then after that, you know, it was just kind of, I got into this mode where I just didn't really, it's kind of hard to put into words, but I wanted to start painting things that I had to say, you know, I wanted to start painting things that I really wanted to, that I thought were either funny, like sarcasm, or I wanted to paint things that were, you know, because just the way the media has just jammed us with, I mean, you can't get away from, you know, stories about Kanye West or Kim Kardashian or people who don't really, who are so divorced of talent, and you can't, you know, they don't matter. But we have to constantly get jammed our faces with it. So I wanted to start painting that and show how ridiculous it was. So I started painting what I call sarcasm. And sarcasm, so my work kind of falls into three categories. You know, I have sarcasm, the works of sarcasm, which are, you know, the clown series was really started with the Bill Murray painting that I did. And I just, you know, Bill Murray is just kind of he's an icon that just doesn't care about, you know, anything else in terms of what people think of him, or he doesn't, you know, he's a very odd character, but he's a genius in terms of his acting and how he can do things. But he just doesn't care about what other people think of him. So hence the cigarette in his mouth and that kind of thing. And it was just, it was really a joke. It was a kind of a joke to do that painting, but it got such a reaction, all the way going up to getting on Jerry Saltz's desk, who's the art critic for the New York Magazine. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, you know, I can use this style of subject matter to talk about things that I want to talk about. Because if I want to get people's attention, I have to do ridiculous things like this. Because these days in art, nobody really cares about pretty girls, you know, posing with the flowers or whatever. I mean, certainly there's a niche, of course, of people that, you know, that love seeing that. And you open up an American Art Collector magazine and that's all you see. You know, it's just endless pretty girls and, you know, still life, da 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 da. And that's great. I don't have anything against that whatsoever, because I'm certainly one that does that kind of work.
Right.
But I needed something different. I needed to say something. I'm not interested in, I mean, clearly I've adjusted my life so I don't necessarily have to make, you know, well into the six figures to stay in LA anymore. So I'm not as interested in selling work as I used to be, which to make really good paintings and to make strong statements in paintings, you have to do it, but it may not be something that people want to hang, or they don't want to hang just yet, you know?
Right.
So I started, you know, doing these clown paintings, and you know, I did a couple of the celebrities. You know, Robin Williams is our sad clown, kind of talks about depression and, you know, what depression can do to an actor like Robin Williams. I mean, the world was rocked by his suicide. I was rocked by his suicide. I was a huge fan of his.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and to get people to think about, you know, issues, or to get people to think about, you know, things like this, rather than, you know, getting a million of these memes thrown in your face on Facebook,
right.
You create a piece of fine art that really makes people stop and go, wow, somebody actually took the time to do a painting of this, so it really must be important, you know?
Right.
And so, and then I started moving over to this ridiculous election that we've got going on of these, you know, basically what we're left with is these two, if you want to call them politicians, you know, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, it's ridiculous. I mean, so I did both of them because I'm not going to be, you know, this is a nonpartisan thing.
Right.
You know, you don't know how I feel about either one. Obviously, I'm not crazy about them, but this is what we're left with, and it made people stop and think, you know. And so, so this is kind of where I'm at with how I feel about painting. Now, the image that we're looking at.
Hold on a second.
The image that we're looking. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think. After, if you look at your Southwest series and painting, you know, the closure period, as I call it, you know, you were going through a closure period. And I think this is a natural extension of that, as in, okay, you know, I look back at my dad's work and it says this, and I look back at you know, other people's work and it says this. So what's it say about Tony Pro? And I think this is that kind of like your natural progression into, you know, finding out what that body of work is going to be when, you know, your kids are older. Let's
exactly.
put it that way. Let's put it that way.
Well,
I don't want to say the other word, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, so I think it was a natural progression from that, and I think the way that you've been telling your story through all of these has been through art, not your words that you've been saying to us, but through your art, I can actually, and maybe it's because I know you a little bit, you know, I can actually see that journey happening. So
yeah,
I think it's pretty cool.
Well,
actually.
that's really the goal. I mean,
yeah,
you know, I mean, art's a funny thing. I mean, you see people. I'm not going to use any names. It's just not.
No.
I don't want to go there. But I mean, see people's art, different people's art careers, and you see some people not doing that great, and then you see people like who are nobody, and all of a sudden they're like, you know, the new flavor in town, and a lot of times that happens because, you know, I notice they'll paint things that they probably normally wouldn't paint, but you get people that just want to paint to be popular or paint to be, or they paint to sell and make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And my headspace went through all that stuff. I mean,
right.
It's natural, you know, you're going to do that. But
yeah,
but I mean, you know, I gotta go home and look my kids in the face every night and, you know, I just wasn't, you know, I'm not willing to do that. I mean, there's some, you know, I can't not paint beauty because I'm naturally drawn to beauty as well. So, which is why I still do, you know, the pretty girl in front of the stained glass window because I like doing those kind of paintings.
Yeah.
I'm attracted to Sargent and Zorn paintings. I'm attracted to, you can't not want to paint like that, you know, and so that's why I still do them.
Mm-hmm.
And I like time period piece paintings, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I have affinity for the, the early 20th century imagery and, the Victorian times. And a lot of people say, well, why would you paint that? Or, you know, that's already been done. It's like, well, you know, sure. I mean, everything in art's been done, but it's just how you do it or how you paint it. So this is kind of where I'm at. It all kind of falls into this sarcasm, beauty, and the West, basically,
yeah.
is what it falls into. And the new body of work that I'm working on now, I'm working on a show that I haven't yet figured out where it's going to show.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm working on a show that's called New Beginnings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally going to be people, places, things, in the beauty and sarcasm and West category of my, process of getting here, being in San Antonio. So there's going to be San Antonio is a beautiful city, especially when the sun is going down. The amount of trees and the light here, and one of the things that I wasn't used to, which I'm sure you are living up in the Midwest, is that, Los Angeles doesn't, California doesn't have water towers, all around the city. And when I got to San Antonio, they're on an aquifer here, and there's mm-hmm. water towers all over the city. And some of them look, to me, look very sci-fi to me. it reminds me, like, at night, because they light them up at night, they light up the bottoms of them, and it just, the imagery of it reminds me of, like, War of the Worlds or something like that. But they're very fascinating looking things, and with some of the architecture, so I'm doing some fairly contemporary looking landscapes of, these water towers and some parts of the rest of the city, and and then also paint some of the people that I've met, and some of these people that I'm meeting.
Yeah.
And also start painting, some of the cowboys that are here in Texas, so that's kind of what's next on the block for me. And, there may be another clown or two, but, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. But it's really kind of interesting. When you said that about water towers, I'm thinking with all of my visits to L.A., and it's like, you're absolutely right. I don't remember seeing one there. I didn't miss them because we have them all in Ohio because we are on
yeah,
the aquifer
of course.
As well, so.
Yeah, sure. But when I visit Chicago, I mean, they're all over, the Chicago suburbs and all that.
Right.
When you don't really, you notice it when you visit a place that has that, but when you start living in a place like that, that's really how you can kind of know where you're at, because there's no mountains here per se. So you
right.
have to, you just kind of like scan the skyline and you see the water towers.
Yeah.
And they're really kind of cool. I mean, some of them are very cool looking, especially when the sun is setting and, they're these big spheres. And
mm-hmm.
Or some of them are, and they have very very architecturally designed look to them, and I've been having fun painting them. They're kind of interesting. So, over the next few months, you guys are going to be seeing some of those images and some of the things that I've been working on here. So
yeah, so let's talk a little bit about painting a portrait and.
Uh huh.
You're teaching drawing and different things like that now. So what are you seeing as the biggest struggle when you paint a portrait? Not so much with you, because you've been doing them for a while, like a beginning student. Like, give some advice on starting to paint portraits.
Well, the absolute number one issue that I see most when people are trying to learn how to paint portraits is that their drawing skills are not strong enough in drawing the head.
Yep.
You have to learn how to draw the head, because that's really the whole thing is understanding the construction of the head,
mm-hmm.
And being able to understand how to look at your sitter and be able to interpret what you're seeing, and basically you're taking what you see and you're designing the shapes and you know, values and edges. You're designing all of that onto a 2D surface. Mm-hmm. And you know that you, because I get this a lot, people want to take my portrait painting class, and I say, you know, and I always ask, well, you know, how much drawing have you had? Oh, I know how to draw. You know, I took a class here. I've been drawing all my life. I've been drawing since I was a kid. Okay. And then so they come into the class, and, it, you know, to me it looks like they'd never drawn a day in their life. Mainly because there's a certain way of drawing or a certain understanding of form that you need to have. Right. Now, whether that's learned by cast drawing to understand form and be able to accurately draw, you know, be able to accurately draw light and dark shapes, or if it's, you know, sort of doing a Riley method, kind of what we were taught through, which is, you know, a solid constructed head using the planes of the head, and then what's called the abstraction of the head, mm-hmm. Which is a series of rhythms in the sort of musculoskeletal. I didn't even say that right. basically includes the muscles and the skeleton, and you know, you finding rhythms throughout the forms in that.
Right.
So that having that knowledge is step number one. I mean, absolutely. If you don't have that, it's ice skating uphill, because you can learn how to mix paint, and you may know how to mix the exact color and value that you're looking at it, but if you don't know where or how to put it on the canvas, that's going to be the biggest problem right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that would be my number one suggestion, and you know, and not taking just any old head drawing class. I mean, you really want to study with somebody who knows what they're doing, or you know, using a book like the Andrew Loomis book. You know, there's several good books out there. Several great videos. You know, I still have my Zoroya online school, where I have my drawing teacher has 10 demos and classes. That was what I used. I mean, I studied with him for 5-6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that certainly gets you in the process of it. But again, it's mileage too, you know, just
right. And you
mileage
have,
of drawing. Go ahead.
Yeah, and you have a couple videos yourself that you did, right?
Yes, I do. I have a couple. I have an Alla Prima portrait painting DVD of my dad, and then I have another one that I do of that I have, which is painting how to paint from a photograph, but to make it look like it's done from life. And those are DVD or available on demand on Zoroya.com. And that's Zarolla, which is it's not an acronym, but it's Zorn, Sargent, and Soroya all combined into one word.
Yeah.
Which is what that means.
right. That's, yeah, because before I was thinking, okay, never mind. We won't go there. So, spell it again for folks so that they know.
So it's Z as in zebra, Arolla.com.
Okay, great. And then
and we have there's lots of different video. We've got Dan Gerhardt's on there. We got Jeremy Lipking, myself, Clayton Beck. In fact, I'm about to release a new Clayton Beck Alla Prima portrait this week. In fact, he did a demo here, and we filmed it in HD, and it's packed with information. Clayton's a great teacher.
Yes.
So that one's coming out this week, and so we still. But more importantly, I've got I've got my teacher Glenn on there, which is the only recorded classes, you know, full classes of his available, unfortunately. And I'm kicking myself. I did not do one on the figure for him. We only did a head drawing, and we always talked about it, but we never got around to it.
Aww.
So that's another word of advice. If you ever want to talk with somebody and you just can't get around to it, just do it. Before it's too late.
Absolutely. Yeah. So one of the things that I have been doing, and again, it isn't something, it's not instruction, but I think it certainly helps our live gesture type live portrait sessions where, you know, it's hit or miss whether or not I capture it, but it certainly gets my mind thinking in a different way. And I was just curious about your feeling about those. Like portrait sessions or gesture sessions, sketching.
I mean, you know, they're very important. Are you talking about in the commission setting, or what are you referring to?
No, just, you know, a group of artists that get together, hire out some models, and have fun.
Oh, yeah. What we do here, we actually have, first of all, going to open sessions or, you know, I call them uninstructed sessions. Those are great at art schools. But yeah, if you have a group of portrait painters, I mean that's a great way. Especially if you make it a weekly thing, that's a great way of just building your skills. You know, because you know painting from life or drawing from life is very, very important. And the more you do at it, the better you're going to get at it. So. Mm-hmm. If you can, you know, get some people together, because that way you can share the cost of the model, which is always tough for artists, I highly recommend doing that. We offer, here at the Capini, we have open model sessions on Wednesday and Thursday nights. And I also host, what I started here was a meetup group. And if you don't know what Meetup is, it is a...
Yeah, I'm on it. It's Meetup. Cool, but go ahead.
Yeah, Meetup is a website which has a, you know, has an app as well on phone devices and that kind of thing. Okay. But Meetup is basically a website that groups from pretty much all walks of life. I mean, if you can think of a hobby or an interest, there's a Meetup group for it. Particularly in the larger cities, larger metropolitan areas, and San Antonio's loaded with meetup groups. I mean, they got UFO sighting meetup groups. I mean, some of it's very strange. But I started the San Antonio Life Painters group, and we do that here once a month at the Capini, and I bring in costume models. And I've been finding and researching people who, and actually, one of the best places to get costumed people and who are usually very willing to come sit is the SCA group, which is the group that sort of reenacts and you know Renaissance times. You know, a lot of them, most of them, always are the ones who are participating in Renaissance fairs, but they go above and beyond what your standard Renaissance fair is. They actually promote. It's basically more about educating people about, you know, the Renaissance times and what people wore and what, you know, how people acted, and they have their own personas and all that. And there's a very big group here in San Antonio that I connected with, and I got a couple of models, and we had one a couple months ago, which is fantastic. You know, they've got these big medieval outfits and crowns and, you know, weapons and it's just a lot of fun to paint. You know, they bring it's basically like you're painting a figure or a portrait with a still life, you know, because they're wearing a silver crown or, you know, whatever, you know, they're wearing jewelry. So having a costume model, you know, and it's fun. And of course you can hear, you know, getting to know the model is part of the process too, you know.
Right.
So you get to hear their stories and that kind of thing. And that just engages people, and it keeps people engaged coming, you know, week after week or every month, you know, however often you do it. And but like I said, every time, you know, the more you have life, you know, life model experience, you're going to get better. It's a natural thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for that. So we are at 2 o'clock, and if you have any questions for Tony that you'd like to ask, please type those in, because we're at the point where we do our live Q&A. While we're getting, while Sarah's getting some questions together, and hopefully folks are typing them in, Tony, what kind of workshops and exhibitions and stuff do you have coming up, as well as Copini?
Well, for me, everything right now is pretty much my show building. And so I've been pretty much working on Copini, you know, getting this place up and off the ground. But I am, one of my pieces, Her Day Out 3, is going to be in the OPA National Show, which is in May, and that'll be up in Dallas at Southwest Gallery of Art. And I'm actually going to be heading up there that weekend, so I will be there to say hi to everybody, and it'll be good to see everybody. I haven't been involved with the OPA in many years.
Yeah.
So it'll be good to get back and see everybody there and, you know, have some fun. And, you know, and of course, a lot of the, you know, I know a lot of the vendors that are be there, and Simi's going to be there from Rosemary Brushes. And she's going to come. Yeah, I'm going to drive her back down here, and she's going to do brush demo for us down here in San Antonio. And and hopefully I can twist Michael Harding's arm to come down as well. So I'll get to see him.
Yeah.
And
give him a hug for me.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's just right now, it's, and then it'll just be building a body of work, you know, another body of work that accurately represents, you know, my current life.
Yeah.
So,
sounds good.
And then, you know, and, you know, the Copini events, you know, I urge everybody to go on to our website, which is www.thecopini, which is spelled COPPINI.org. So thecopini.org.
Okay.
And you can see all of our, we got Rommel De La Torre coming in April. And that's going to be a great workshop. And we have, in May, we've got Sabin Howard coming in conjunction with the Rodin exhibition at the San Antonio Museum of Art. He's going to be doing a drawing demonstration. He's a fabulous draftsman and sculptor. He was just awarded the big World War I monument that he's going to be doing the sculpture of. So that should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And and we're also looking forward to seeing Dave Kasson in October, and we'll be seeing Max Ginsburg in the fall, and Zheng Huang will be doing a still life workshop in December, and he's always very popular. He's a fantastic still life artist. And you know, there's going to be more added because I'm slowly getting people in the on the list. It just, you know, takes time, and you know, and probably somewhere in there I'll do a workshop myself here, but mostly I've been just teaching weekly here, so that's enough for me. I gotta be able to go home and see my family at night, so I don't want to do too much. It's a lot to do.
I bet. So Sarah, can you unmute yourself, and do we have any questions coming in?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
We did a question here from Carla. Carla says, I'm so enamored of the clown series. Are any prints of them available for purchase?
The clown series images, they're the one of, there may be some available. I did a limited run of really high-end G. Clays of Bill Murray. And those ones, the Bill Murray ones and the one of Donald Trump is available through, let's see, let me get that address here. Another really well-known artist, he's a urban artist named Justin Bua. My prints are sold through his store. From the clown series, he's been handling that for me. That one is, if you go to justinbua.com, JustinBua.com, there might be some available. If you just send them an email, there might be some available left. I haven't, they're in LA, and I haven't had a conversation with the rep there to find out how many they have left, because it is a limited run. And then I may at some point be doing some other ones soon, but those are the only two right now.
I like the Jeffrey Koons balloon dog.
How do you like that? Yeah.
Yeah, that one made me chuckle while you were talking. I was over here kind of chuckling a little bit. So, okay, great. So, Sarah, anything else? This was taken from your sketch.
That's the only question so far. So if you guys have a question, please type it in.
So we've gotten all the websites. I don't know, Sarah, did you capture some of those so that you can put those in the email that comes out as well?
I'll go back and get them.
Okay. I think I can probably send you some too, because I kind of wrote some of them down. So we'll get that together.
Okay, cool.
And Tony, is there anything else you want to add?
I'm trying to think. I think I've I put a lot out there already. But the primary thing right now is just go to the Capini website. When you go to the Capini website, there is a newsletter sign up sheet that pops up right on your. There's a little pop up that comes up right when you log in. Just sign up for the newsletter. We're not obnoxious. We don't send out a ton of stuff. I only send out, if you're not a member of the Capini, I only send out maybe once every 3 weeks, 3 weeks to a month, about new upcoming workshops, or bring in somebody new for a new workshop that goes up for sale, I send it out immediately so people have a chance to buy in and get registered so they can get a seat in one of these great workshops that are coming in. So if you're in anywhere in reach of Texas, instead of flying all the way to, Arizona or somewhere, you don't want to fly too far if you're close by. We are going to be a great venue for, a great place to visit, great place to paint, great place to see art, and of course a great school to, take workshops and sort of see and get involved what we're doing here. So that's the Copini.org, TheCopini.org.
Okay, great. Any other questions? This is your last chance, guys. So if you're listening.
I don't see any.
Don't see any? Okay. And one thing that I just wanted to bring up, too, for the folks that have listened and will be listening, if you're going to be in the Cleveland, Tennessee area, West Polk County area in May, or if you want to drive up, I'll be doing some book signings there, as well as hopefully over in Memphis. I'm talking with somebody over in Memphis as well. So we'll have about 3 or 4 book signings signed up or in place to do down there in May, starting around May 20th, and I'd love for you guys to stop by and say hello, and so that way I get to see you guys. So I know there's some folks that are listening that are around that area, so make sure you stop by. They're going to be at the library there in Cleveland, Tennessee, and in West Polk Library, and then in Memphis we'll be at the booksellers there. So just wanted to mention that. And I also just wanted, Tony, to say thank you to you as well. I know that it's crazy right now for you with starting up there at the Copini and everything. And I do appreciate your friendship, and I appreciate the fact that you came on the show and told us all about you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you very much for having me on. This is it's great to connect to all your listeners again and, of course, to chat with you, Linda. And it's been way too long.
Yes,
and hopefully it won't be too long until we get to see each other again and share a glass of wine.
Yeah, well, there's might be, if I can talk Debbie into it again or Deborah into it again, maybe I can head down to see you in San Antonio sometime, do a book signing there, and maybe do some art with you guys too as well. So
absolutely,
we'll
that'd be great.
That worked out. Yeah, tell Elizabeth
I said
hello.
Yeah, we'd love to have you.
Yeah.
All right, I will.
Okay, so Sarah. Over to you.
All right. Thank you guys so much. Just a reminder to everyone, we were recording today's session, so it will be up on our YouTube, and you can find it on artistnetwork.com/art-chat. And we have our special coupon code for you. ArtChat10 can be used at northlightshop.com to save 10% off your entire order. So if you shop with us, please be sure to use that. And you can visit artistnetworkuniversity.com to find online art courses and artistnetwork.tv for our videos. So, Linda, do you want to say anything about the next art chat that's coming up?
Well, we're going to stay in the friend zone here, I guess you can say, because I think it is on April, oh gosh, is it the 6th?
6th, I believe.
Yeah, let me look at April real quick because I don't want to, yes, April the 6th at, I think it's 1 o'clock our time, we're going to talk with George Gallo. So 1 o'clock our time is Eastern time. It'll be morning time for George. So
Why do you want to talk to that bum?
I knew you'd have a comment, honey. He's going to be heading out, I guess, the following week to the Plein Air convention, where he's going to be on center stage doing some painting, I think, there for that. So we're going to be talking about color relationships, color harmony, you know, all that good stuff.
Ask him about his front tooth too.
Oh, okay. I'll have to do that. I'm marking it down now. Okay. I got that listed. Yeah, I will. So George is always fun anyway. And like I said, it's kind of fitting that we did, you know, we talked with Tony this month, and then we're going to talk with George next month. So, and then in May, we have Wham coming up. So Deborah Kearse is finding it, and Deborah, if I didn't pronounce your last name correctly, I'm sorry about that. But Deborah and I have never actually talked in person. So, but her group of women mentors will be joining us and talking about how to form a artist mentors group. So that's what WAM stands for. So that's all we've got coming up.
Awesome. Well, we hope you guys will join us for the next Art Chats, and thanks everyone for listening today, and thank you so much, Tony and Linda, for being here.
Yeah, thank you for hosting us. Yeah.
All right.
We'll see you all later.
Have a great day, everyone.
Yep, bye. Thanks, Tony. Bye.
Thank you. Yep. Bye.
Bye-bye.